Welcome back to Schneps Connects. Today, we are joined by Dr. Jeremy Cohoben, president and CEO of the Children's Village in Harlem, Dowling. Under his leadership, the Children's Village serves over 21,000 children and families each year and has become a national model for family-centered support as recognized by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. The Children's Village offers services such as family reunification and foster home placement, teen outreach and mentorship programs, in-home workshops, and support groups for families. Jeremy's played a key role in shaping the Family First Prevention Services Act and has received various honors, including the Angels in Adoption Award and the Exemplary Innovative Leadership Award. He's also a trustee for Save the Children Action Network and a voice for reform across New York City and national platforms. Today, we're going to discuss how Jeremy and the Children's Village are reimagining child welfare, strengthening families, and leading with purpose. So, Jeremy, thanks so much for taking the time to chat with me.
It's good to be here. Thank you for the opportunity.
It's my pleasure. And I think, you know, really the big thing here is how you got started in really helping children, because it's obviously a huge impact on people's lives. And, you know, really would love to hear how you got into this role in the first place.
Absolutely. I got to credit my parents and my mom a bit for this. They served in various places that were very difficult and war-torn. And I grew up wanting to be nothing like them. Absolutely nothing like my parents.
teenagers feel that way sometimes.
That's
they
right.
Grow out of that, right?
But then I came of age in Emporia, Kansas, in the Midwest. And while in college there, with a plan to become a military officer, I was in ROTC. I had a great, great captain, an amazing man, and I hope he hears me say this. He encouraged me to go down the road in this very small community where we lived and maybe volunteer in a home where there were 14 children. I knew nothing about foster care. You know, first generation immigrant, that was not part of my experience. But I was really curious, and I had this one question that I kept asking, like, where are their parents? Because to me, the idea that there would be 14 young men in a home day after day didn't really compute.
Yeah.
And I was not a social worker, so I just took them fishing. I got a job there. We went fishing in the Neosho River quite a bit. I knew how to do that. We came back and cooked. And over time, I was really inspired by their story, but also troubled by their cry that they didn't know what was going to happen to them next.
Sure.
And it didn't strike me then, but when I came to New York to do my PhD, I needed employment. I was a bike messenger in the city for a couple of years. I thought, well, I'll do that. Did that, but then felt that I needed something more than, you know, this was bike messengering in the 1990s. It was a different game then. No e-bikes. We were doing it the old-fashioned way. I remember this experience and started working at an agency that had a lot of children that had come off the crack cocaine epidemic into foster.
Wow, sure.
And that got me started. And here I am 25 years later.
Hmm. So obviously you got involved with child welfare reform, you know, pretty early. And I had mentioned in the intro, you were involved in the Federal Family First Prevention Services Act. So why don't you just share a little bit, like, what is that all about and what does that act represent?
It's a very interesting change to government financing. Until the Family First Prevention Services Act was passed, and incidentally signed by President Trump during Trump 1, the incentive was to separate children from families. Because at the point of separation, you could draw down federal funds. So, you know, this is a problem when the financial incentives require that you separate a child from a family in order to get the money. It's not always intentional, but systems tend to go where the money is. And we had looked at this quite carefully because Children's Village, you know, is a great, great, great granddaddy of residential programming. You know, we created the first residential organizations in the United States 174 years ago. So we knew the damage that having kids live in places that are beautiful but devoid of love could have to children. And we worked with a group of amazing advocates, national advocates, that built a model and presented it to the federal government that would allow states to do two things. One is draw federal funds to help families stay together when safety was not compromised. So, you know, we don't think this child is going to get killed. We think we can help this family stay together, and we get 12 months of federal funding to do that. Second, the act creates a limit on how long children can stay in institutional care. I am a great supporter of good institutional care. When kids need treatment, they need treatment, but they should not live in institutions. All kids deserve a family. You're never too old to be loved. And this act was a way for us to rework the financial incentives to create true treatment for children that need residential treatment, but also provide support for those families that love each other, but just need a little extra help to stay together and to be safe.
We'll talk about treatment, because is it children that have issues themselves, or is it really just children that need, you know, homes because, you know, they don't have parents?
So it's both.
Okay.
We have children, you know, typically children come into child welfare because there's a crisis at home.
I see.
Because something has happened with parents. And, you know, family separation, regardless of the reason, is always traumatic to children.
Sure.
Being taken away from your parents is not easy on the parents. It's incredibly hard on children. So we absolutely always have a group of children that need to be separated from their families. No question about that. But separation shouldn't be permanent. You know, if children can't go back to biological families, there are aunts, there are uncles, there are rabbis, there are pastors. We should be relentless in getting kids family. I mean, you know, if we as big government, big charity, take kids away from family, we owe them family.
Sure.
And on the other side, we have a group of young people, and this is much more acute since the pandemic, that have significant mental health needs.
Mm-hmm.
They haven't been able to get the treatment. You know, we don't have good psychologists, social workers, psychiatrists in our rural communities, in our urban, densely packed urban communities. These kids didn't go to school in many of our communities. Schools were closed for way too long than they should have been. So they lost socialization skills. They lost adult teacher mentoring relationships. They are lost out there. Now they are 17, 18. Some of them are 19, and they need some real treatment. And in our recommendation and in our work, treatment is best when it's time-limited, efficacious, and connected to family.
You know, that makes a lot of sense. And listen, I don't think that there's enough services for children with mental health issues.
Not at all. We need more. But it's got to be within the context of family, right? Healing comes when you know you're loved. To put kids in a shelter, put them in a group home, put them in a residential facility and say, get better, and we'll figure out what to do with you next, is not a pathway to healing.
So your organization, the Children's Village, what is your, I guess, physical footprint, and what do you do kind of virtually, whether it's, you know, support services that can be provided to people offsite?
So we are very old-fashioned. We didn't close during the pandemic because we had about 1,500 kids that needed us. And if we had closed, they would have had no place to go. We don't work remote. I have a few teams that may work one day remote. Look, we believe that the power of healing is personal. We have great psychiatrists. We have an amazing chief psychiatrist that sits right behind me, great medical directors, great social workers, great clinicians. But we don't think we can be truly impactful in a virtual setting. Not that it doesn't work for some, and in some instances. In our work, you know, working with three populations, young people touched by child welfare, young people touched by juvenile justice, and young people who are victims of human trafficking, three groups where we have no doubt that personal interaction in person is a game changer.
And where is that main facility?
We have in New York, we have about 17 different locations. In some places, children live with us for short stays. In some places, we have medical clinics. We have clinicians. We have psychiatrists. We have a 200-acre campus right outside New York City, about 20 minutes outside city limits in Dobbs Ferry, New York.
Sure.
We build buildings. We just built a couple in the last year. So we have a ton of locations.
That's terrific to hear. You know, the foster care system, people know about it from even watching some, you know, famous movies, but, you know, unless people are really involved in it, there's got to be a lot of misconceptions. What would you say are some of the biggest misconceptions that you really work to try to educate the public on?
The biggest misconception is that our kids are hurt and broken.
Hmm.
You know, so think of all the movies that you've seen. What you see are stories of brokenness. Hey, look, sure, there are lots of kids that are damaged because adults let them down, but they have tremendous potential for healing, incredible aspirations. Every one of them, I work with thousands of them every year, could be like you and me, could have my job or your job. What they need is the stability of love and belonging.
Sure.
When you have love and belonging, you can do the psychiatry, you can do the medical, you can do the healing. But in the absence of love and belonging, kids have no reason to get better because they've been let down so many times. The books you read about kids being rejected time after time after time. And then occasionally you have this exceptional story of success despite rejection. I think what I want people to know is that every one of my kids, every one of our kids, is that exceptional story, as long as they get love and belonging.
Yeah, which is not easy. And I'm sure you must have a great staff to be able to care for them.
We have a great staff, but what's even greater is, look, we're not family. We don't claim to be family. We don't pretend to be family.
Mm.
What's amazing is right here in New York, we have thousands of families like yours and mine that step up and say, count me, I'll be family. It's amazing. I mean, we have...
So how do you find those families?
We go out there and we remind them that our kids are not broken. Yes, our kids have challenges. Yes, we have a small group, probably about 2% of our young people that have really complicated needs, and family is probably not the right option for them right now. But 98% of our young people, when connected to the right family, find stability and begin to believe that tomorrow can be better.
Mm. You know, obviously, there's been an influx of immigrants over the last few years, particularly in New York, New York City. How does the Children's Village play a role in supporting those families or those children, really? Or, you know, can it?
We do. We've been supporting immigrant children forever. I mean, we were founded in New York City, which is the center of immigration throughout our history. In the last 20 years, we probably served tens of thousands of immigrant children. It's complicated because even with immigrant children, what we want to do is to get them to family, right? Because they shouldn't live in government custody. They shouldn't live in institutions. We want them to get to family. But we are also strongly against children being moved alone. You know, we were not happy to see the thousands of children being moved across the border in the last few years. That was not a happy time for us. Because, you know, I'm a dad. I wouldn't want my children in the hands of, you know, some of these traffickers are really bad people. So there are two problems with child trafficking, right? One is the hurt, the sexual abuse, the bad things that happen to kids when they're in the hands of strangers. The other is that, you know, families are so desperate and children are so desperate for a better life that they often are forced into debt burden.
Sure.
So you have kids that are, you know, and families that are taking incredible debt. And then, you know, once they're here, they can't even go to school and fight for the American dream that they were dreaming of, because now they owe money to some really bad people that demand that they work harder, work longer.
Mm.
So I think we really need to be careful.
So how long have you been with the organization now?
Long enough to own all its problems.
Well, how about this? Over that period of time, what would you say is your proudest or biggest accomplishment?
I think moving from this idea that institutions are the way to go with children to working with great people. We didn't do it alone. to remind the world that kids do best when they have love. You know, that doesn't mean we don't take away kids from parents when parents fail. And there are parents that are dangerous to children. No question about that. But our job, you know, and it's incumbent on us that when we take children away from family, that we give them family. Because you and I are here today because of the people that love us.
Is there enough of demand for foster families? Is that an issue at all?
It is. We are always looking for families, especially for families that have the courage to be a parent to a teenager. Sure. That's a whole different game.
Yeah.
You know, there are a lot of people that want a little baby, but we, Children's Village, you know, of the thousands of kids we work, the ones we gravitate to are teenagers and often older teenagers. It takes a special family, and we define family very broadly. It could be one person, right? As long as you're appropriate and you care, you're family. It could be two dads, two moms. It really doesn't matter. We want kids to have families, but it takes a special kind of family to step up and say yes to a teenager.
How do the teenagers come to you typically? Social workers? Is it homeless shelters? How are they finding your services?
So they typically come to us through a referral. So in New York City, the Administration for Children's Services does a very good job of only removing those children that need to be removed, and then they would refer them to Children's Village, depending on the needs of that child. There are certain things we do really well. And when that child comes to us, if they come into one of our residential programs, our first objective is treatment, and then immediately trying to get that child back to family. But we also have a large number of children that come directly into our foster homes. And I'm proud to say, I think we have about 250 amazing, amazing foster families in New York.
That's like great.
Amazing foster families.
Do most families take in more than one child either at a time and or over a period of time?
Many of them over a period of time. Some of those amazing people take sibling groups of three, four, and five sometimes.
Wow. Yeah. That's a tough job. That's not easy.
Unbelievably tough.
Yeah.
Unbelievably tough, but they do it with such grace and humility and love. I'm often humbled in their presence.
Sure. Yeah. Well, listen, both of you, both sides, it takes the team effort, right?
Always.
So what about the future? What would you say are some of your goals with the organization, you know, over the next few years, this year coming up and the years ahead? What would you like to see both for the organization and for child services overall?
We would love to see more housing. All of our work is lost when people are homeless. The moment a family is homeless or evicted, children lose their school. They lose their peer group. If they go into a shelter, children are in the midst of strangers. And, you know, that's never good, right? Parents or the parent is often overwhelmed because he or she is trying to manage a job, manage the children, manage the shelter, look for a new home. And we have too many families, not just in urban New York, but even in our rural communities that don't have stable housing. 15 years ago, we started building beautiful homes, and I hope that in my journey, we'll build many more beautiful homes that are affordable, that are in the right location, because location matters. That's one. And the second is to continue to press this idea that here in the United States, many, many, many more of our children can and should live with family.
Yeah. Listen, that brings a lot of stability, right? No question. Yep. And it's good to be able to recognize that, to be able to find, you know, a real solution rather than just, you know, treating the children for years.
That's right. And, you know, kids do well when they know that adults in their life are relentless about their success, right? We don't want kids going through foster care and graduating into the homeless system and graduating into another welfare system, right? Our kids want to be taxpaying citizens like you and me. But to get there, they need adults who are relentless.
Sure.
Relentless, demanding, pushing them, supporting them, loving them. The things that we do for the people we love in our own lives.
Well, Jeremy, you're doing great work, you and the Children's Village. And, you know, I'm really appreciative that you took the time to share, you know, the organization's mission and all that you're doing. And hopefully some people listening will help contribute.
Thank you. I appreciate you including us in your broad and well-regarded network.
That's my pleasure. Thanks so much for listening. Please subscribe to Schneps Connects. Our podcast is available on all podcast platforms or on our website at podcast.schnepsmedia.com.